And welcome into the Thursday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski is back, Ian Safar with you here on this Thursday morning. PK with me for the next 2 days here on the program. PK? Good morning. How are we doing?
Good morning. I'm doing all right, but I have to say I think I'm more into the Knicks than I thought because I am upset this morning. I've got lingering the sort of lingering pain from a horrific loss that you have when you're invested.
Yeah.
And I am not shrugging off a historically bad loss the way I would if I was casual fanning this. So, I mean, I'm hypocritical in a lot of ways here. I've been out on the NBA and out on out on the Knicks, my Knicks, for a long time. But you plug them back into a big case scenario, and I've been in. Now, I turned it on. I said this, you know, in our first conversation. I turned that game on with 7 minutes left. My wife was watching something else, and I'm now a YouTube TV guy, and I turned it on my phone with 7 minutes left. And I saw everything you needed to see to know what the story of that game was.
You did.
But, you know, the show before us, the ESPN show, was having a collapse versus comeback conversation. I mean, it's both, obviously, but that's a massive collapse.
It is.
I mean, it is a massive collapse. I do think the Knicks fan on that show was pointing out something very important, that when Reggie Miller single-handedly took down the Knicks in the game that created that choke, the Knicks won that series.
Right, exactly. All right?
I'm not saying they're going to win this series, but Reggie Miller is largely like, if you had to pick one moment from Reggie Miller's career, that's it. He scored like 9 points in what, like 30 like seconds.
Eight? Yeah, it was crazy.
Less than that. It was insane. A top five NBA moment of my lifetime, and made the choke signal. Unbelievable game, but they lost the series. I think it's important to note. And Halliburton's unbelievable tying shot last night and this unbelievable effort, if it propels them to win the series, will mean much more than if they lose it. I think teams have a easier time coming back from these things, especially early in a series, than fans do. You know, as a Knicks fan, even I that am not as invested, it's absolutely devastating.
Yeah.
Knicks go back to practice today and they're like, yeah, we blew one, but got a chance. But that is some compelling NBA TV.
It was there. Really good stuff last night. I mean, Halliburton, he's been about as clutch as it gets in the playoffs so far. And that shot he hit yesterday, I mean, he was named in the player poll the most overrated player in the NBA.
Didn't look like it last night.
He's a pretty good player, man. Like, he's been awesome.
And
in
Brunson
the playoffs so far.
Is an incredibly clutch player.
He is.
But he scored 43, but defensively, he was not getting it done last night. And they're going to have to, he's going to have to figure that out if they're going to be big players in this series. And look, the Knicks, this is often the case in a game like that. They were on the line twice late, which is where if you're protecting a big lead against a crazy comeback, you
gotta
nail things down.
Yep.
And they didn't. And that sounds simple, but it is simple. And they didn't get it done there. And, you know, if they lose this series, you might be looking back at two trips to the stripe in late in game one, and so it comes down to that.
The Knicks stubbed their toe in game one. We'll see if they can respond in game two. Dallas with a comeback win against Edmonton last night. They were down 3-1, and they stormed back in the third period, and they end up winning that game 6-3 last night. So Matt Duchene, Mikal Granlin, a couple of former Preds scoring some big goals for the Stars last night, and they win, take game one of the Western Conference Final. In that one,
how much does the rest of this line up against each other, or does the rest cycle get these games off of the same schedule? I know NHL people hate to hear it, but there's a pecking order here.
There is.
The NBA is ahead of the NHL in this pecking order. NHL needs to schedule in a way that they're not up against it. Plus, I mean, just American sports fans, I think, it'd be great if you had a NBA Easter, you know, conference finals. I understand they're two conference right. finals. You're not going to be able to totally steer clear, but it seems like you could have basketball, hockey, basketball in a very nice way where there's something on every night.
You would think so. And also, I mean, they do that when the finals get here. I mean, they just kind of stagger it every other night. And I think that's a great thing specifically for the NHL. Like, that's to have your product by itself. But, yeah, like you had two games going on at the exact same time last night. So it's probably not a formula for success for the NHL there. Although, like, I mean, Dallas, Edmonton, you got star power all around. I think it's going to be awesome. But, yeah, I mean, that one could go seven games. But I agree with you. If they could find a way to isolate the times a little bit better and at least stagger the starts a little bit more, that would be good.
Yeah, that double screen. I'm still relatively new to the YouTube TV experience where I need that. And I wish I could do it with the baseball too, but that's on MLB TV, so you're going out of the same element. You can't involve it there. And right. We've talked about some of the difficulties of this when you cut the cord. But it does give you an option there to do two, which I hadn't thought of last night, but I will look at it going forward here.
Sad news yesterday in the NFL, PK. Jim Irsay passing away at the age of 65. He has been running the Colts since 1997, so obviously some great success during that time with Peyton Manning, drafted Andrew Luck, and we know that they've been kind of wandering through the wilderness the last few years as a football team. But Jim Irsay passing away at the age of 65, that announced yesterday afternoon.
A complex figure for sure. I've read a lot about him, struggled with addiction in a big way. I read, I think, Greg Doyle's column from the Indianapolis Star said was in, recovery at least 15 times battling his demons. Did a lot of crazy good charity work for the city of Indianapolis. And so I think we tended to see the crazy, wild stuff that he did several times under the influence. And, tweeted out some wild stuff at some wild times. But, there was a lot written about him during his career. Yep. About the good stuff that he did. And he headed up what was a very good football operation for a long time. And he's one of these eccentric characters that when he was a younger man, before things really kind of ate away at him, was the kind of like likable eccentric in a lot of ways when you got to look at him. I never met him when I covered the division. He, as out there as he was, like media wise, that he would be visible.
Yeah.
He wasn't visible at like training camp and stuff like that when I covered that team for four or five years. He wasn't around the way you would see McNair at Houston or Khan at Jacksonville or Amy Adams Strunk here.
Yeah.
But, the league universally, everybody was mourning him yesterday and will be. It'll be interesting to see. I see one of the daughters seems to be in line to be the chief, at least, of the ownership team going forward.
Yep, some sad news on the passing of Jim Irsay yesterday of the Indianapolis Colts. PK, some other news in the NFL yesterday as well. The Tush Push does not get banned. It lives on. According to reports, the voting ended up being 22-10, and you needed 24 votes to pass it. So they do not reach that 24-vote bar, and the Tush Push, for the moment, lives on. Now, we'll see if this is revisited at a later time, which I'm sure it will be. But for the moment, the Tush Push living on this
sounds
year.
Like ownership was as sick of it as many of us.
Yep.
I think it was Jed York of the 49ers who reportedly said, can we just vote on this already? I'm interested to talk to Charles Robinson about this, who I know will have some views. I mean, it seems inevitable they're going after this and they're going to get it. I mean, Goodell knows who the 10 teams that voted against him are, including the Titans, yep. who I appreciate taking the correct stand on this. But he now can lobby two of those 10. He can lobby all of those teams to find two to come with him to switch it. But the Eagles, I think, made a they made a very impassioned plea as to why it shouldn't go away.
Yep.
They brought in the retired Kelsey yep. to help make Kelsey. The case. Yep. Jed Lurie, made quite an analogy he in did. That room. And I don't know how they've swayed as many teams as they have swayed to be against this thing, which I think the general fan population does not want to see go away. And that the outspoken people who don't want to see it go away have pretty articulately argued should not go away.
The Eagles, Ravens, Browns, Lions, Jags, Dolphins, Patriots, Saints, Jets, and Titans were the teams that voted against the proposals. Those are 10 that probably in Goodell's sights right now.
Good for them.
So we'll see what ends up happening on the tush push front and then when this resurfaces, which I'm sure it will at some point. But get used to Jalen Hurts lining up under center and running the tush push this year.
I don't think the lobbying will end. I don't think this is Goodell now just lobbying those 10. I think Lurie and the Eagles yep. and some of those 20, some of those other 10 will continue to lobby the 22 to flip them back.
Yeah, I'm going to be really interested to see how that part of it goes because – I kind of like this in the NFL where if you're going to change something, you need 24. Like, I'm glad it's not just simple majority because I think that's stupid. Like, I think if you're going to change rules you have in place, it needs to be the overwhelming majority. But are they ever going to actually get to 24? That's going to be
It feels personal to me.
It kind of does. Yeah, and look, I'm not a huge fan of the tush push, but it does feel pretty personal. Like, I understand the argument if you're the Eagles or an Eagles fan where you're like, so you guys want to ban something because you can't stop it. Like, that's what you want to do. And I do have a problem with that. Aesthetically, I don't love it. Like, I think back to the NFC Championship game when Washington jumped offside like eight plays in a row. And I was just like, what are we doing here? Like, what's happening here right now? But I understand if you're an Eagles fan, you're saying you guys can't stop this play, so now you want to take it out.
Yeah, figure it out. Remember, there's a great meme or of a guy screaming, I think it was at a Florida football game when Florida was really yeah. bottoming out, just screaming at them, figure it out. We'll figure out how to stop it, slow it, make it, get the percentage down.
We got a busy show today on the program. Mike Tannenbaum from ESPN, former NFL general manager, will be with us at 6:30. We'll get his thoughts on Cam Ward and the Titans. Jared Stillman will be with us at 7 o'clock. I'm sure that'll be spicy a little bit later, coming up at 7 o'clock with Stilly on the program.
Call him Tom Brady.
Yeah, Brady will be with us at 7 o'clock. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, his weekly visit at 8 o'clock here on the program as well. We'll get your thoughts on all that. Coming up next, I want to get PK's thoughts on a topic we brought up earlier this week with Rex Road on the AFC South. We'll do that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tonight as the Nashville Sounds take on Scranton Wilkes-Barre at First Horizon Park. Pregame at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Ian Safar here with you. We'll have Mike Tannenbaum from ESPN coming up here in about 10 minutes at 6:30. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. PK, I would assume you, like the rest of us, look at the AFC South and say this is Houston's division to lose, basically for lack of options, because we know where the Titans roster is. Jacksonville is Jacksonville. And the Colts apparently have a quarterback competition between Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson. So I don't know how well that's going to work out for Indianapolis. I look at Houston, and it was interesting to get Joe's thoughts on this earlier this week. Like, is Houston actually a threat in the AFC, or are they just the best of a bad division? They've revamped their offensive line, and we'll see how effectively they've done that. You know, they keep adding receivers, so I like what they've done at receiver, even though we may not see Tank Dell for the entire year. But, you know, the AFC South is obviously very down right now, and I look at Houston, who's, I think we would all agree, the best of the bunch, and I wonder, Are they actually a threat in the AFC, or are they just the best of a bad division?
I lean towards B, best of a bad division. I think a lot of us got behind them last year as a potential threat. And in some ways, they took a step back in the second year of the new regime and the new offense.
Fire their OC.
Yeah, and so he was a hot prospect in terms of head coaching, and then they fired him, and they're looking to revamp the offense for C.J. Stroud under Nick Haley, the new offensive coordinator. They're redoing the offensive line with Cam Robinson as their new left tackle. And Christian Kirk is at it. They've got so many receivers, Nico Collins, Tank Dell, but they drafted Higgins and Noel.
Yep.
They've got a lot of bodies at that position, so they're not going to fail their quarterback for lack of weaponry, it doesn't seem like. I don't know about the offensive rebuild, but they're certainly trying there. I think I could see them winning the division by three games and helping make the end of season games irrelevant in a way that is making Roger Goodell want to reseed things. But the other three teams to me don't have much juice. And, I see good competition for second and third in the AFC South amongst teams that are relatively equal. But I think Houston's roster, Houston's talent, and if Houston's offensive scheme is effectively revamped, you could go. They could have said to Slowick, well, you were pretty good and things went badly and let's get back on track. That's a big move.
It is a big move.
A big, bold move. And so, I'm tempted to give them credit at this stage and say, well, D'Amico Ryans looked at that and said, it's not working, it's not going to work, we need a big revamp of something, even though we're pretty good. We'll see if that works, but I tend to respect a coach that does something like that.
A couple things from the Titans' perspective. Number one, I'm glad they're not ending the season against Houston, because it felt like that was becoming an annual tradition. And you brought up something that is also interesting when the schedule came out in terms of how the divisional games are stacked. Because we've seen this where the Titans play the same divisional opponent twice in a 3 or 4 week span. And it's like, why are you doing this if you're the NFL? I mean, you got Indy September 21st, again on October 26th. That's probably still a little too quick.
It's at least 5 weeks for
right.
all of them.
It's at least 5 weeks for all of them. I mean, you're done with Houston by November 16th, but you got them early as well. And then, I mean, Jacksonville, you don't see until November 30th, and then they're going to be the last game of the year after that as well. So at least they've stacked it a little bit better from the Titans.
Yeah, I've maintained this for a long time. I think it should by rule be 6 weeks apart. I mean, division teams can be completely different 6 weeks apart in the season. And when you see a same team in a 3 week span, which the Titans have done relatively frequently, it's like, I think four teams and four fans, it's a bore.
Yeah.
I just saw this game 2 weeks ago, and I'm not interested in seeing it again, particularly a Titans-Jaguars game twice in 3 weeks. It's not doing anybody a service. So I'm glad they got away from that, and I think they should work league-wide to get away from that.
I would agree. And you brought up the Cincinnati-Baltimore situation where Cincinnati's going on the road to Baltimore for the fourth consecutive year on a short week playing on the road on a primetime game. I do think – I understand you stack in your divisional games and you want to close out the year with a divisional game in case it means something. So I get all that. But sometimes I think they just throw the schedule together and they're just like, well, I think those are the games you got to pay attention to the most if you're the NFL schedule makers. It's amazing to me that nobody in the NFL office apparently has either caught that or they don't care that Cincinnati's going to Baltimore for the fourth year in a row in primetime for a week.
God bless Warren Sharp, who is monitoring these things and hammering home the inequity of them. And people should follow him and pick up on this and help drive his points home about these inequities, which are not conspiracy theory things. They are real inequities that the league needs to hear about and address. It's ridiculous. And the Bengals, you know, nobody wants to complain about their schedule, but behind the scenes, I think the Bengals should be saying, hey, look, this guy's got a point, and we're making the same point. And next year, we damn well better not have this, or it better go in our favor.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Mike Tannenbaum from ESPN will be with us. Coming up next, we'll get his thoughts on Cam Ward and the Titans and a whole lot more. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. We head to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in former NFL GM Mike Tannenbaum to the program, now, of course, of ESPN. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Great. How are you guys doing?
Doing awesome, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Mike, obviously a lot of excitement from Titans fans here in Nashville on the Cam Ward front. As you watched him coming up through the draft process, what's your opinion on the type of player, the type of quarterback that the Titans are getting here at number one overall?
I really like him, and I think, unfortunately, there was so much other noise about the quarterback position in the draft that he didn't get his due. I think he's dynamic, excellent arm strength, and a great teammate. And I think they're going to have a frontline quarterback for a number of years.
Mike, on the Brian Callahan front, I mean, obviously, you know, Titans were 3-14 last year. He did not get good quarterback play. The roster was not in a good spot. So he's heading into year two as head coach now. And the math would suggest that, you know, coaches in this situation typically don't survive in the NFL. So what's your view on Brian Callahan, the situation that he finds himself in heading into year two?
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in him and his family. I got to work with his dad for a number of years in New York, Bill. I think they stand for the right stuff. And I think, you know, Tennessee has a great young coach. And in a different era, we wouldn't even be talking about that. And, you know, guys like Coach Belichick and Don Shula, not to say that he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but in the formative years of their careers, they didn't always get off to a great start. But I think Brian's made of all the right things you want in a coach.
Their young guys on the offensive line had an adjustment period with Bill Callahan. Now they bring in two veterans in Dan Moore and Kevin Zeitler, who obviously have been around the block. What's a reasonable expectation for how quickly these guys should assimilate to Bill Callahan's stuff? And what's a reasonable expectation for how much better what's been a horrible line should be?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that's where, look, the offseason isn't what it once was, but I do think we're going to see a massive improvement into year two. And I think part of it, too, will be the way Cam Ward's going to play. I think he's really good with the fundamentals. And I think when you tie his footwork to what Bill Callahan will do, I think you'll see a much better line.
You like Cleveland drafting both Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders, if I'm not mistaken. Why, and who's the odd man out in the four-pack in Cleveland?
Yeah, I thought that was very opportunistic. I like Shedeur Sanders. You know, there's a lot of reports that maybe he didn't handle things well the pre-draft process. I think he has more ability than Dylan Gabriel in Stanley. I don't think that's close. And if I was Cleveland, I would certainly give Shedeur every chance to be the starter.
Mike, when you look at the AFC South as a whole, obviously, you know, Indy with a quarterback battle with Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson. You've got a new regime in Jacksonville, and Houston certainly has been the best of the bunch over the last couple of years. Is this as simple as this is Houston's division again, or do you think anyone in the AFC South can actually challenge them this year?
Yeah, you know, look, I like Houston. I don't understand Jeremy Tuffle trade, maybe because I was part of drafting him, but when you have a great young left tackle in his prime and C.J. Stroud, I don't know how you get better moving on from somebody like Tunsil. I think Tennessee is going to be much better. I think one of the ways that Callahan approached the game is, like, let's have our opponent lose the game before we ever have to win it, something they didn't do a year ago. I'm not a believer in Jacksonville yet, and I don't know who the quarterback's going to be at the Colts. So I think Tennessee could be meaningfully better and should be a fun team to watch, because I think they'll get better as the year goes on.
What's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, great question. Look, I have a lot of respect for the Steelers organization. They've done a lot of great things for a long time. I got to think they know who their quarterback is. I'm just hard-pressed, guys, to think they give us a second-round pick of $30 million a year to have Mason Rudolph be their quarterback. So let's see what happens. But I would think Aaron Rodgers has to be in the mix here.
And is Kirk Cousins going to stay in Atlanta in this backup role, or are they waiting for somebody to get hurt and find a trade opportunity? And then how does the money shake out in terms of cap dollars?
Yeah, all great questions. I can't imagine he'll be there. Like, you wouldn't want somebody who's one snap away. So I guys think that at some point they'll make a move where they'll eat some of the money, the acquiring team will eat some of the money, but it's hard for us to think that he'll finish the season as a fellow.
Mike, when you look at Mike Borgonzi, obviously a lot of success in his role in Kansas City in their front office, now stepping in as GM of the Titans. They've got an interesting structure here with Chad Brinker and just the way that the front office is structured. But your thoughts on Mike Borgonzi as he steps into year one as general manager of the Titans?
Love him. Boston guy, football guy, football family, smart, hardworking, you know, sort of like humble, which is you know, rare and, you know, a leader nowadays. But I think he's going to do great things. I was I got to know him through the interview process this past year, and just really blown away, and I think the Titans got a great one.
Mike Tannenbaum, former NFL GM, current ESPN talking head, our guest. A lot of dads, Mike, have told their sons, if you could just master being a long snapper, you could have a pretty sweet life ahead of you. Scout for us, if you will, Jacob Tannenbaum, UVA's freshman-to-be long snapper.
Yeah, I would say that maybe the only thing he ever listened to in his 18 short years on this planet. So, no, couldn't be more proud of him. And, yeah, he's earned the right to compete. And Coach Elliott is going to be more grateful for the opportunity, and he'll be there in a couple short weeks. And, long snapping is a good way to go, so I appreciate you asking.
Did he grow up with a lacrosse net in your backyard, snapping balls into that?
He did. He was a lacrosse player, long snapper. That's actually the three-sport combo that he actually played most of his start coming up his athletic background.
Very nice. Well, Mike, we really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being with us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Yep. Mike Tannenbaum from ESPN, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Sounds like, I mean, Tannenbaum throughout the draft process talked a lot about Cam Ward, and he was a big fan of Cam Ward. And one thing he kept bringing up was his ability to get the ball out quickly. So we've talked about that a lot on the show here, the ability to process what you're seeing and get the ball out very quickly there. You know, the point he brings up there, and you asked about Zeitler and the additions on the offensive line, and he was very quick to point out that Ward should really help the offensive line as it relates to getting the ball out, which is probably something we don't think about enough.
Yes.
But, I mean,
you got to invert that.
You got to invert it. Like, I think part of, not the entire reason, but part of why the offensive line and the sack total was so high last year, I didn't think Levis was always great at getting the ball out, making decisions, and seeing what was happening out there. So, you know, we've talked about this. You've brought it up. Sacks sometimes are a quarterback stat. And how much is Cam Ward going to be in a better spot to mitigate some of that?
I'm a big believer in that sacks are at least in part, and to a larger degree than most people think, a quarterback stat. And I'm very curious to see how Cam Ward impacts that and how soon. You know, certainly he's not going to be as good at helping lower that number at the beginning as he will be ultimately if he is who they expect him to be. But, yeah, that's a much more symbiotic relationship than people tend to think. You know, Dan Moore could have helped himself when he's saying something along those lines when he was saying, you know, I'm in front of my man despite those 12 sacks. I'm being facetious here, but it's
quarterback's got to get rid of the ball.
Right. That's what he said. It's just not as simple as, you know, you block your man, and if your guy gets the sack, well, if it's 5 seconds. Then you know, if you failed to block your man for 5 seconds, it's not strictly marked against you the way it is at PFF, you know, and that's why we like to look at these things more precisely on a Monday and say, well, yeah, technically he got beat, but he got beat, you know, well after the clock expired on the expectation for him to block that guy.
Yeah, I thought it was also interesting. You know, Tannenbaum clearly a fan of Brian Callahan, talked about, you know, him going back with Bill Callahan there. So, You know, we've talked about this before. The math is what it is. Typically, when coaches find themselves with a number one overall pick, by and large, they're not there much longer. So there have been exceptions to that. Zach Taylor in Cincinnati, which is where he came from, is an exception to that. So we'll see. But the math is kind of what it is on the NFL head coaching front. Then inherit the number one overall pick.
Wish his phone had been better, of course.
Yes.
We apologize for that.
No doubt about that. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. More reaction to what Mike Tannenbaum had to say, plus a point I want to get to with PK on the Titans front. We'll take your questions for PK on the Titans. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll have Jared Stillman coming up at 7 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 the game. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon. Big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Jared Stillman will be with us coming up at 7 o'clock. Charles Robinson at 8 for his weekly visit, talking all things NFL.
Yes, the Tom Brady, Jared Stillman.
Yes. I'm sure that'll come up here in a few minutes. Looking forward to that discussion.
I mean, you can think of him as Plato or Mother Teresa, Einstein, FDR. Or if you want to get there, I mean – He'll probably go there. Jesus.
Maybe so. I mean, I did.
If Tom Brady farted and you put it into a fragrance, I'd buy it.
That's not the part. Ian likes that part.
I do.
It's the
I like
part
that part,
where
too.
He's, yeah, but that's a fandom thing. I'm not interested in a fandom thing. I'm interested in a thing where he thinks he's Tom Brady-esque.
He's Brady. I did enjoy the illustration from DJ Burnside yesterday of
where Tom was begging out of a film session.
He's like, Stilly. I don't. This is a level of preparedness that I've just never experienced before. Thank you. Good stuff. So we'll have that with Stilly coming up at 7 o'clock. A question on the text line, which I do think is interesting, and I'm interested to see how the Titans are kind of this plays out for them this year. Gunner asking, no matter how fast Cam Ward gets it out, if the guys can't get early separation or be in the right spot, it's all the same. And I'm looking at the wide receiver room right now. Obviously, we know Ridley. Lockett playing it seemingly primarily on the inside this year, which
yes.
is going to be interesting to see. And then you've got obviously the two fourth-round rookies that are coming in that are going to have to make an impact in some regard. Are the Titans equipped to get that early separation
this year? That's an excellent question. Who's the quick separator? Who's the quick separator, and or how do you scheme for a quick separation? We need to see these new guys and get a feel for that. And you're not going to get a great feel for it in phase three of OTAs and at minicamp because it's a no contact thing. So you're not watching guys get off the jam. But I will say, we've had feel for quick separation in the past with Adam Humphries, and I've been talking more about Kyle Phillips during this offseason than I've talked during things. I mean, Kyle Phillips was an amazingly quick separator in the offseason, and it didn't translate. So we were incredibly excited about the quick separation possibilities with him, and it didn't come to fruition. So, maybe we don't see some great evidence of quick separation in camp or in the preseason, and then there's something that shows up during the season. So we may not know, really, until things are in action and we see a game plan unfolding. But I think it's an excellent question, and we have to see what DK does and what Iyo Manor does. Those are really the two biggest questions. Have to see what Lockett has left. That's a big question. But this is a team thing. Like, there is no real obvious answer at wide receiver in a lot of key categories.
Well, even Ridley.
And that is a very Titan-esque thing.
Yeah, like, Ridley, we know, is a good player. I don't think that Ridley is a number one wide receiver probably on a good team. I think he's probably a high-level number two. But Ridley's a good player. One thing that's also true with Ridley, and we've talked with you about this, like it has taken him a while to get going in each of the last 2 years. And one of those was in Jacksonville, one of them last year in Tennessee. Now, to his credit, he ultimately did get going, even with poor quarterback play around him. But like, are they going to avoid what has now been 2 years in a row of Ridley playing with different quarterbacks and taking 5-6 weeks into the season to get going? Like, we had, you know, Mike DiRocco on last year before the season, and he talked about, like, in Jacksonville, he could not get on the same page with Trevor Lawrence. He wasn't always running the right route, and it took him half a season to do it. And that's kind of the way it played out last year.
He's not learning a new offense, but he is learning a new quarterback. So you hope it's more about having learned those offenses than learning those quarterbacks. But it was very Levis-specific last year. It seemed like they couldn't time things up. And, look, I like Ridley a lot, but his field sense – I think he almost kind of admits it on the couple plays that stuck out like sore thumbs. He said, I thought there was a guy there.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a guy there.
He just runs out of bounds.
That's not what you want to hear from the guy that you're counting on to be the linchpin of your passing offense.
Ed on the text line asking, do you think the Titans have any interest in the remaining edge free agents? For example, if they added one of Judon or the Smiths, how would that shape up how we think of this edge group? This from Ed on the text line.
Well, I mean, I think they should be combing over all of those guys. And if they think they have anything left, I mean, could you get – it'd be great if you could get those guys to work out for you. And I don't know where you get to the line that you could get them to work out for you, you know. You want to see what they have left. I mean, Judon is not that far removed from being a significant guy in the league. 3 years removed, you know? But he just comes from the most pass, the other most pass rush desperate team in the league.
Yeah.
And so, and if Atlanta doesn't want him, you know, that's a big indictment. That's a big statement. And before that, New England gave up on him. Now, that was probably more financial than anything. But, yeah, I mean, they should be inspecting these guys like crazy. They shouldn't be particularly expensive being on the market this late. I think their tendency is or has been, and we don't know what Borgonzi's thinking is here, but kind of like, let's see what we've got before we go out and get help. But I'm pretty confident what they've got is insufficient.
Not good enough. Yeah, not good enough. I mean, the problem with all those guys is, you know, as a 32-year-old myself, they're all 32. So what do they have left? Now, in Za'Darius Smith's case, he had 9 sacks last year between Cleveland and Detroit. Also, here's the other thing. Not that the, you know, the Titans are like, they've got some, oh, we can't go there, tag on them or anything like that. But you're talking about the worst team in the league. So, like, does Za'Darius Smith want to come play for the Tennessee Titans? Or is Za'Darius Smith going to wait for another opportunity to open up elsewhere for a team that's maybe closer in, you know, to competing for a championship?
Yeah, and all those guys may be doing that. And you don't have to have them right now. I mean, you'd like them to be involved in what you're doing right now. But mostly you'd like them for the first day of training camp. When things sift out. But I you know, provided you're getting a good guy who's not going to be a problem and will fight for a role, I would love to see them add one of those guys with the understanding, and the fans maybe won't get it, that, you know, maybe it doesn't pan out. You know, you're not saying this guy's coming in and saving our outside linebacker position. You're saying this guy's coming in because we need help, and maybe he's still got some juice.
Well, look, yeah, I don't need anybody to come in and be Javon Kearse, but I look at their edge rusher group right now, PK, and it's just bad. And then what happens if somebody gets hurt? Like, what happens if Arden Key gets hurt? What are you doing at that point if you're the Titans? Like, I mean, you have no depth there at that spot. You really don't have – good enough start. I mean, look, I guess we'll see with Oladejo, right? Like, he feels to me more of like a project, which is not really what you want in a second-round pick, but he just started playing the position a year ago. So, you know, maybe he does come in and is immediately effective in the NFL. That's what you need out of your second-round picks. But I don't know that my expectations for him as a rookie are all that high based on his background. So, like, it's already really light. And then what happens if somebody gets hurt at that point? I mean, you're just – You have nothing behind those guys.
And, you know, Lorenzo Carter, is it going to be more than a body for you? He averaged slightly under four sacks in a 17-game season. You know, so that's a, you know, replacement level-ish player.
Yeah.
Why not take a stab at doing better than that? Arden Key, we know, is a streaky player. He'll have a month where you say, hey, he's really showing up.
Yep.
And then he'll have a game and you'll be like, where was Arden Key?
Right. That's not changing at this point of his career.
Yeah, that's who he is.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Jared Stillman will be with us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans. We'll discuss his preparation for all of his shows, I'm sure, as well, and his comparison to Tom Brady. We'll get into that coming up next. Charles Robinson will be with us at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 106.3 The Game.